Morning, everyone. My name is Todd Cochran, and welcome to Saturday Morning Tech Show. We're not doing a hangout this morning. We're up on Skype, and you guys using the new version of Skype with the 16:9 HD ratio?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I am, but it doesn't appear to be coming up that way. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, I've got it's 4:3 here, so that's probably part of the problem. Jeffrey, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
I'm awake. I guess that's the better word. Of course, Jeffrey Powers from Geekazine at geekazine.com. And of course, Rob is with the Xbox team over at Microsoft, part of the, I guess, what is your official, you're the podcast, I don't know, how do they actually term your official title there, Rob?
I'm a business manager of the podcast marketplace on Xbox Live, Windows Phone, Zune, Windows Media Center. That's probably the best way to refer to.
Yeah, I guess we just need to title you as podcaster extraordinaire, new media extraordinaire, or Microsoft podcast advocate, or something like that. Yeah. A little bit.
Classic Zune guru.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's been a busy week here. Jeffrey and I were just talking a little bit about our process of putting videos up, and him and I are quite honestly just a little bit sick of seeing CES content being published. You know, it's an extraordinary amount of work to put up 250 plus videos.
I would imagine. And it's a lot of tedious work, you know, going in and making tweaks to the video and then encoding it and then uploading it. There's a lot of steps to that, I'm sure.
But it's not just that. That's the easy part. It's the blog post and getting the company names right and the interviewee names right. You know, it's and when you're doing stuff in mass, you're bound and determined to get some stuff broke. But you've been learning some shortcuts, right, Jeffrey?
Yeah, I've got a couple WordPress shortcuts. We've implemented a couple WordPress shortcuts up on tpn.tv, which has saved us, will save us on the back end if we have to do any type of tweaks to that, to those areas. Plus a bunch of plugins, which we're going to be talking about a little bit later today in a roundtable that will be on the internet, was it Monday or something like that?
Yeah, it'll probably be up on Monday. We've been doing, Jeffrey and I are doing a series of roundtables talking about different plugins, stuff for podcast, and we've been putting those over up on TPN, and we just basically, him and I have gotten the show going again. We're going to kind of kickstart it here for a few months and see how it goes. Of course, the minute I start talking, what I did is I stepped on this headset, these earphones a while back. And ever since I stepped on it, it right ear sometimes just quit working. And there's nothing more annoying than having one ear in and one ear out. But it'll come back. So anyway, Jeffrey, what's new with Geekazine?
Basically got the shows going. The new show, iPad 365, which is an iPad app a day. For 365 days today, we showed off I got my iPad right here. We showed off an app called Show You, which is a bunch of videos in the that you can sort and watch now, watch later, and stuff like that. So, and of course, tomorrow we'll be talking about the big old Super Bowl and some apps you can get for the Super Bowl.
Oh, it's the big show. You know, you're actually by law, you're not allowed to say that other two words.
The bowl of superness?
No, the big game. The big game is what you're allowed to say there. It's quite the talk.
Super Bowl, huh?
No, okay. they issued some serious directives. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Jeffrey. They introduced some serious directives on what new media and broadcasters were allowed to say. If you're not a sponsor or officially associated with the big game, you can't. And if you're a sports reporter, you can say those other two words. Otherwise, you have to refer to it something else, like the big game. But okay. I'm just kidding. But it's true, though. Go ahead, Jeffrey.
So tomorrow I'll have an episode about the big game and go from there. And of course, the Day in Tech History, which is at dayintechhistory.com. Did you know that it was today, like, was it 2008, that Mr. Bill Gates got a pie in the face?
Oh, it's been a few years since that happened then, huh?
Exactly. So
what were you going to say? Getting
any more pies in his face? He's actually, I think he's helping too many people around the world to get that happen to him now.
So I guess the question is, what do you guys think that the, think about the whole big game thing with them and their, the stupidity on to say the other. I think what we should call is the big stupid game then, that way you if you can't call it the, by its real name, why don't we just call it the big stupid game?
Big. All I can say is I'm not going to be watching much of it. That's all I can say.
You're going to watch it, Rob, or you're not?
I'm not going to watch much of it at all. And it's really been funny to watch what's been happening around the TV commercials. Around, all those TV commercials are getting let loose into the wild online way before the game. And it's really taken most of the reason for watching the game out of the picture.
It's true. I guess they think they can get a bigger jump, but that's why, people, you know what they're going to do during the commercials is they're going to get up and they're going to go get chip dip beers and some more barbecue. They're not going to, why watch? You already watched the commercials, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's the only reason I watched the game to begin with is watch the commercials.
Well, now you can get an app to do that and vote on everything, so.
That's right.
Yeah. My kids I want to watch, and they're probably going to watch, and I'm probably going to work.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds like
more video to do.
What were you saying? Oh, my wife bought some, we don't normally keep a lot of junk around here. And one thing, well, the primary reason is if it's around here, I'll eat it. So, it's just better not to have it in the house. It lessens my temptation to cheat and, not eat stuff I'm not supposed to be eating. And so she went out and bought some chips and some dip. And I was like, giving it the old big eyeball last night. She says, "This is locked down until Sunday. You can't touch it." But, well, there's a lot going on. Go ahead, Rob.
So I'm sure that didn't stop you from being desiring of that food, right?
Well, of course. You can always desire. It's the, the ability to go and grab it. That's the challenge.
Yeah, exactly.
So I had to tweak you up just a little bit, Rob. You're a little bit low on the audio level.
Okay.
So lots of stuff in the news, and one thing I thought was very interesting here yesterday was that the gal over at Huffington Post, Arianna Huffington, announced that she is going to be launching a live streaming network where they're going to be online 12 hours a day with fresh content, news, talk, chit-chat, gossip, and all the crap that they put out. I'm not a big fan of hers. I've kind of made that publicly known for a long time. But, what do you think of their move here into going to live video?
I can make a comment on it. I think that this is the beginning of a major trend that we're going to see here over the next 2 to 3 years, where a lot of brands that have been kind of playing around maybe with a little bit of streaming or podcasting are going to be moving into doing big time things with original content as more and more companies try and establish channels around cable television to, establish their own direct broadcasting connection with their followers and their audience on the web.
Yeah, it is an interesting move, and I guess from a content creator perspective, I'm pretty excited about it. Irregardless of what I think about Huffington Post, but you know, they have a huge following. We can't, you know, you can't deny that. But they say they're going to have, you know, I'm sure they're going to have some tech in there. They're going to have, you know, all the, probably their major, all their major blogs that are probably their top tier blogs will probably have show spots. But, this is not a cheap undertaking. And if they're going to do it right, this is a, you know, it's a pretty big investment by AOL.
But I think it's the right direction for them to go, though. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I think so too. And you know, that's one of the reasons that I've, you know, I keep hoping that the, you know, enough of the Tech Podcast members will understand that we could very well do what they're doing and have a full lineup, you know, maybe not 12 hours a day, but maybe 2 or 3 hours a day. We could have 2 or 3 hours of live content scheduled, and we could probably do pretty well with that. But just
and
can't
thousands of videos. I mean, if we could, not counting the 250 videos from CES that we did, we could not. I personally last year, I believe I threw out about another 200 to 250 evergreen type videos that we could easily put up into circulation, so they'd have content to watch on a regular basis.
Yeah, and that would you know, that would obviously take a little work. You know, first there, we're gonna have to find some place to host it and have it streamed and organized, and you know, because when you have everyone spread out across the country, it doesn't you know, it makes it very difficult to manage that.
But you know, I should also be clear on my thought on this too. Is that I think it's the live component of this is not going to be where necessarily where the scale is. It's still going to be the on-demand piece that scales much larger. And I think if you see kind of the alignment and the concept of a live streaming channel is probably, I'm not sure that the audience is going to be that huge there, but what that's going to create is kind of this opportunity for them to do kind of more what's called social TV kind of aspects, where they get their audience involved more in the show. But their major part of their distribution and reaching their audience is still going to be on demand.
Yeah, I think you're right there. But you know, you look at some of the major players in the space, they carry, you know, pretty high load of viewers. Now, I don't know if I don't know if that equates into paying the bills. As a matter of fact, I guess Leo had a big segment on his last show talking about his challenges, and I have not listened to that segment. Jeffrey, I think maybe you did, because someone pointed it out. But you know, Leo is finding this, you know, basically economy of scale issues. What did they have to say?
Well, basically, the show was about, he was talking about putting your content up online, and the one thing that he was bringing up was the content partner Mediafly on March 31st is going to be going to a corporate model. They will not be aggregating shows, and they will not be, I guess, all the business that it was worth it to knock out business like Twit and get them to find some other medium, because they're on March 31st, their onair.mediafly.com is gone. And so Leo basically said, well, what do we do? And he didn't really say too much. He did say that they're making a Roku app, and it sounds like they're bringing as much as they can in-house, and which is probably a good thing for them.
Did he talk about the economics, or did he just,
he didn't go into any detail. He just said that he's got a very talented programmer that's writing a Roku app right now.
Well, it's, you know, I never understood why he didn't have his own app to begin with in the first place. So is he going to have on demand, or is the app going to be live, or did they even hint?
I'm guessing that, because not only was he on Roku and Boxy, but he was also, I've heard of situations where Twit's actually on in TVs themselves in their app stores. So I would guess that Mediafly must be giving them the codes to make the changes to rewrite Twit And go from there. I couldn't see Mediafly just leaving Twit high and dry come April 1st.
Well, I think they completely changed their business model a while ago. I'm not surprised, you know, because, you know, maintaining apps, we well know maintaining apps is very, very expensive. And we don't do the live part. We just do the on-demand. Any little change the manufacturer makes to their app, you have to go through an update. And then you start counting, okay, Samsung, Google, you know, all these different devices that we're on now. You know, the maintenance on those apps alone is not cheap. And they wow. and they update stuff all the time and break it. So that's, you know, a big, I'm sure a big part of Mediafly probably figured out that they weren't making enough money doing it. And I don't know what kind of business relationship he had with them, but. It also goes back to a topic of not basically entrusting any of your media distribution or not maybe say distribution, but don't you have a hard time? I should say this. You should have your own .com for a better word.
Platform.
You should have your own place to put your point of presence.
But you still have people that you have to rely on. Like for instance, that you're live streaming, you either go through Ustream or it's a GoDaddy streaming service, right?
Well, right now, you know, the live stream right now is up on Amazon. You know, we're using their commercial services. I pay for that service, and it's okay when you're doing this show and I'm doing a couple of hours or maybe 3-4 hours a week. But when I bring this show back on. You know, if I would have tried to have done Amazon at CES, where we had a peak of 37,000 people on the stream, I can't even imagine. I would have had to mortgage my house. I would have had to take out a second mortgage to pay the bill. It wouldn't have been cheap. So, you know, it's not an easy easy solution. Now, I think that, you know, you watch some of the big boys on Ustream. You look at Leo and you look at some of the other shows and they don't have advertising running in those shows. But I find it, based on cost, I find it very hard to believe that Leo's paying to have non-commercials or not to have commercials in his content.
I'm sure he has some sort of a special deal with those guys to pay them a little bit. And maybe there's a little bit of a, you know, a discount that they're throwing his way because he's Twit, right? So, but it also doesn't sound like he's actually actively promoting them at all. So it isn't like they're truly a sponsor either.
Yeah. And when you load the Twit page, there's different videos that, you know, sometimes it's Vimeo, sometimes it's, I don't know who all he uses, but, you know, we tried to work with the Ustream to, you know, we said we'd mention them and we give them props during the, during the show, but they would not go commercial free for us, which was, you know, it drove the people that were watching crazy because every 20 minutes there was a 30-second pop-up that was, you know, running an ad. And, you know, it got a little bit in your face. But, you know, the alternative was, you know, well, if I had a sponsor that would come in for $50,000 and say, well, we'll pay that bill, you know, we could do it. But otherwise, it's very challenging.
So, something to think about for next year.
Yeah, but we'll see what happens with Huffington Post and their live. It's not going to get started until later in the year, but it'll be. I like just to look at their production. You know what they do, what they've set up, how they've configured things, and you know that's a very big tell on how serious they are. Is the studio atmosphere?
If you look at the Engadget show, I don't know if you guys have seen that video podcast that the Engadget guys are doing. It was actually started, you know, a couple of years ago. It's like a full hour long TV show, variety show concept. And that's kind of been in the works, with the AOL folks for a while now, where each of these properties has started to really almost create a TV quality show. And it's been a very successful podcast. And from what I can see, you know, the Engadget property is still doing that. They have a mobile audio podcast, and then they have this long form TV show. It's almost like a, you know, like a late night talk show type format. There's a desk and a, you know, and a couch and stuff like that. And it just clearly seems that the momentum for this has been building for at least a year or so. And so I'm not really surprised. It's going to be interesting to see how the other properties of the Huffington Post or the AOL kind of move this direction, because I don't believe that there's been a lot of new media kind of TV show quality content that's come out of a lot of their other properties. So, yeah.
Do they bring people in remote like this on Skype or something, or do they have most everyone right there in the studio?
Yeah, it's actually been right there in the studio. I don't believe I've ever seen them have a call-in guest on those shows. It's been, you know, like on a, you know, almost like a soundstage almost, you know, actually a live audience, the whole deal. So it's almost like a, you know, like a Jimmy Kimmel Live kind of program is what's been going on. And actually, if you look at what The Verge is doing, it actually is very, very similar to that. So you know, those are kind of two models that you can look at that I think that we're going to see more of.
Well, a lot of that has to do with location, 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 location.
You know, and it's all about budget too, right?
And budget as well. You're right. And doing that is not cheap. Not at all. Studio, it's the overhead on bringing people in and, you know, all the other stuff that goes along with it. So, I like Leo's model. I think Leo's model works good too. You know, what he's, you know, how he's bringing guests in. I think that's been pretty effective for him. And I know he's doing a lot of experiments with different shows and stuff. I haven't been over there and looked at any of his content probably since December. So I need to go over and see what they're doing, because they're always kind of shaking things up a little bit. But at some point I'll get out there and actually check his studio out. Now, one thing I am doing is I'm testing one of those G10 cameras. I'll give you guys a, and I be honest with you, looks a little bit washed out, and I'm having a little challenge with the white balance on these yet, is that when you got, it's where I can tell the difference is he really has a lot of lighting. And this studio has, for a better word, we have less lighting. And so I've had better cameras. So I'm going to have to get to the point where I can have a much better lighting in here to support those G10 cameras. Like, my goal is to free up some floor space here. And also, when we do events, not to have to ship 80 pounds worth of cameras every time.
You need the big light bulb.
Yeah, I've got those new lights that I used in Vegas, but I haven't put them up yet.
This is actually a 300 watt incandescent bulb, and I wish I had a smaller bulb to compare it with. But you know, this is like three times the size of a regular household bulb.
The challenge with those bulbs is they're not white balanced at 5600K. So
yeah,
you know, that's the only downside.
It's a great alternative.
Inexpensive too.
Yeah, inexpensive. I don't use this one simply because of the fact that it's a yellowish light.
Right.
And you want to get the soft white lights if you're gonna use them for doing any type of video. I do have some 250 watt versions downstairs. But Leo's studio, a lot of them are just high-end incandescent, the tube bulbs with a piece of cloth over them to diffuse the light.
Yeah, he's using high-flow fluorescence with white-balanced fluorescent bulbs in those. Yeah. And
those are pretty expensive.
Definitely. Well, they're... You know, those bulbs are expensive, but they last a long time. So it's not like you're replacing those every week. But, you know, I'm probably going to, these light panels in here, once I get, part of my project this weekend is to have a bar. I figured out how I'm going to hang my lighting bar and all that stuff in here. So that's going to go and work here this weekend, Home Depot. So here I come to get some 2-inch pipe. But the...
You want to do something different? Go into the bathroom area and get the shower rods, the ones that you can adjust.
The challenge is I don't want to hang 75 or 80 pounds worth of stuff on those.
I use them downstairs to hang lights and stuff like that. It's just like a regular bar.
Yeah, what we're going to do is it's going to be mounted to the ceiling. I'm going to have like a, just imagine a bar across the top. Because I'm in a small room, I'll be putting, be attaching it to the joist, and it'll be basically a two inch bar that'll, a couple of them that will run across. So I'll have holes in them that I can basically hang lights and extrusions from. And, part of it is I just don't want nothing falling on my head in here. That's the main thing. And the 2-inch pipe is pretty, pretty inexpensive. And especially they're already threaded, and you just put on the, you know, you put in a 90 and you make a base and you're good.
Well, speaking of do it yourselves, not to linger on this point, but you should check out what Filmright has been doing, because they've been doing a lot of do it yourself projects.
Is that filmright.com or something like that?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, they actually put together a camera slider, so it can easily slide back and forth.
Oh, that's cool.
So, and I'm going to show Jack that, and cause so we get some great ideas for the CES booth for next year.
One thing I am going to be telling Jack again next year is don't touch the doggone audio controls. Once again, we had so many takes that were mics were down, and you know I told those guys leave the mics alone, but they just couldn't leave their hands off the audio settings. And it was really noticeable in editing the video, especially in the intros. So many times you came back and there was no audio, and they had to tap into mic saying, "Hey, turn me up." So that's why we put those compressors in this year. But anyway,
yeah, we did double compression. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So Google is asking the FCC for permission to set to test a mysterious Wi-Fi and Bluetooth enabled entertainment device in employees' homes in four U.S. cities. They're going to be, they've asked permission to test 252 devices, and they're going to be testing between January 17th through July 17th in Mountain View, in New York, Cambridge, Mass., and Los Angeles. And everybody's wondering, what is this mystery device? Any predictions?
I have no idea.
I'm going to guess it's Google TV 3.
Is it their own Google TV?
Well, if you look at what Roku did, Roku turned their next generation into a over-the-top television plus gaming system. So adding a game for, you know, because you can add a channel and that's going to be absolutely free. But you add a game and you're talking 99-cent or above price point. So I wouldn't be surprised if Google's trying to figure out a way to put games, especially not as much 99-cent games, but $29.99 games that you'd get at like a GameStop or something like that.
I'm suspecting it might be their own set-top box. You know, they've had challenges with partners, and you know, so I'm suspecting it might be that they might Google own a Google branded set-top box.
Yeah,
they got enough money, but, you know, they could burn a few billion and I have to worry about it.
Well, they did buy Motorola, so...
Oh, that's true.
We shall see on that one, huh?
Yeah, that actually has long-term effects to cable providers, too.
Yeah, I think that there's it's clear that there is a kind of a battle going on between... the cable providers and next generation TV providers here. I think over the next few years, it's going to be interesting to watch this space, because I think the cable providers have not really given users the best of TV experiences on, you know, with their software on their set-top boxes. And there's a lot of room for improvement. So I think the tech companies are seeing that as an opportunity to jump on and fix that problem, right? And along the way, get their software into the TV environment more. And it's really interesting to see this happen. I've been wondering when it was going to happen for a long time. So I think this is a great, great kind of time to be a TV watcher, because I really think it's going to get a lot better here over the next few years.
I also, well, go ahead, Jeffrey.
When we were at CES, I was at the Intel booth, and the Intel booth, they had this, it was called Adeno, I think it was, or Demo or something. The videos are going to be coming up very soon on TPN.TV, but it was a set-top box that had full social networking capability. It had full application support, granted controlled by your internet service provider that would provide the box, but it would have full games. You could play things like Bejeweled and Plants and Zombies and all the other popular titles that come out there. So I think they're working on a solution to make it so you're still paying for your cable and getting a whole bunch more.
Yeah.
You know, I think that what's going to happen is the cable providers are going to be forced to start putting in stuff that are being found with Oxy and all these other devices. I don't think they have any choice. Either that, or they're going to try to put enough in there to, you know, keep people from wanting to go out and buy a different device. So they're going to put stuff in. They're going to make deals with Angry Birds and different folks, or put a few things in there. But I find it very hard to believe that the cable providers will ever allow my content to get into their boxes. I'll be very surprised. But, you know, Rob, do you think they're going to allow that?
Well, I think that what they're going to have to do if they're going to survive in the long run, and I'm speaking, you know, 5 years plus, is they're going to have to embrace the web content more, because more and more, that's where people are gravitating towards. And I think from a defensive perspective, more and more of people are cutting the cable. I mean, that's just what's happening. I mean, it's not like a tsunami of people cutting the cable. There's still a lot of people that are maintaining their cable TV connections. But I think clearly there's a trend away from paying the cable costs and having that old-time set-top box in there. People want to move to something new. And I think that's the real threat to the cable companies right there. And you're exactly right. They are going to have to evolve what they do. They're going to have to involve web-related type of distribution and stuff. And you're starting to see that, you know. The Comcast folks, you know, with the Xfinity app on the iPad, and you're starting to see that movement because they're getting squeezed. They're getting put into this situation where if they don't evolve and adapt to what the users, what their customers are doing with media, then they're going to, at some point down the line, be considered kind of not relevant to how people want to consume TV and video. And I think that they're really under threat right now. And I think at the same time, these big companies, the big software companies, are seeing that as a opportunity to come in and either help those cable operators take that next step, right? Or go around them and create software. And that's what you're seeing in Roku and the Google TV. But it's interesting, you know, Xbox is trying to walk that line too. They're trying to do a little bit of both, right? They're trying to offer content that's around the cable folks, but at the same time, they're trying to create a platform that's welcome and good for people that are cable subscribers. So I think that it's going to be a hybrid as you go forward. And I think more and more there is going to be opportunity to get content like TPN on TVs. And I think you're actively doing that. So that shouldn't be a big surprise.
You look at a content provider like, Glenn Beck. We talked, I actually was on a show last night. We talked about this last night. Glenn Beck is probably the best example right now for anything. And right now, he basically made, he only made seven figures. I think he made like $2 million when he was on network TV. He goes and he starts a show, and he gets 230,000 subscribers in the first shot at $5 a pop. Now, that's not $2 million, But and of course, part of that is to cover costs and employees and stuff like that. But when it's all said and done, 5 years from now, he first of all, he'll set the standard for what a TV show should be doing. And second of all, he'll probably have even more subscribers to and people backing him and sponsors, and probably end up taking more than 2 million himself in the long run.
Well, if you look at his model, and he, there's some people that hate this guy, and because of his politics and everything else, and he's out there a little bit at times. But you know what he's done is, and I basically subscribed just to see what they were doing. I wanted to watch behind, because he got a behind the scenes show that talks about everything. He was in New York City, and he basically said, "To heck with being in New York," and he loaded up his team and brought them to Dallas. He spent about $1 million on his studio, so there was still a significant amount of money. As a cost to get this thing set up and so he can go live. He's using some of the same exact technology I'm using right here in the studio for streaming and everything else. So it's, that and the same thing that Leo's using. So, that the technology standpoint wasn't bad, but here's another guy that has a syndicated radio show. Leo still does have a syndicated radio show. So you got him living on one side of the fence with the traditional media and then going it alone on the other side with the with the new media. So these guys are the ones that are bringing, making inroads. Now, the challenge is, and I think what I've recognized, is that, Todd does not have a syndicated radio show. Jeffrey does not have a syndicated radio show. We are known within our sphere, and we do a lot of great stuff with new media folks. But you look at the most successful folks. You look at Adam Carolla. He was all over TV for years. So he took that TV audience and brought it to new media. So there's been a few folks that are the YouTubers that are quote unquote famous YouTubers. But if I met one, I wouldn't know who they were. But there's been very few self-made, but not a lot of self-made stars on the internet. Especially on this side of the fence, especially on the podcasting side of the fence. And that, I don't know, what does that say? Does it say you have to have $1 million set? You have to come from major media to break out?
Well, I think what it says is that coming from traditional media is an advantage, right?
Well,
and that having that background and that experience, right, and being skilled at that level of content production is a big advantage as well. Plus, just the sheer visibility of the scale of these guys on the traditional media side has been a big help for their success. Online. So I think that's what you're seeing there. And there's nothing to stop, you or Jeffrey from going out and getting a radio show going on broadcast side. I mean, that's exactly how I started, my show back in 1999. I had a broadcast radio show and then took it to the internet and had both running for many years. And I can clearly see some strong synergies in doing that strategy. And it really helped me a lot back, with my own show, to be in both platforms. But it was a lot of work. I mean, to manage a nationally syndicated radio show on the broadcast side, as well as manage the distribution online, that's a full-time job. I mean, that's not something anybody can do.
And there's, you don't see the individuals we were referring to that are doing this, switching and managing the audio and managing the video feeds and watching the downstream and watching the chat room all at once. You got to be a jack of all trades to really make this happen. It's, and here, okay, so do I want to move the camera? What do I have to do? I have to do it. It's not someone else that is over here. you know, and all this stuff looks, woo, this thing looks fantastic. You know, it looks great. But I would much rather not have any of this stuff here and have some help in doing the production and focus on the content. You know, I'm worried about, okay, do I have Rob's lower third right? Do I have Jeffrey's right? You know, and that, you know, Jeffrey, you're in the same boat, right?
Pretty much. I don't have, I'm not to the level of what I don't have a TriCast or anything like that.
Well, you really don't need one though either too. You're doing stuff with Wirecast.
Yeah. I when I do my weekly show, it's on a MacBook Pro, using Wirecast and I've got scenes set. So the lower thirds show up and then they disappear.
Right.
And then I switch over from scene to scene to scene. If I want to have a lower third, then I switch back to that scene.
Right. And you've just pre-programmed it and but it's still at the same time, you're doing your own switching. And sometimes that distracts you. And I, you know, looking here, I'm looking down at this. I'm not looking at the camera. And Rob, I guess for a better word, I think we do pretty good for what we have, you know, what we're forced to, you know, from a production standpoint. It's tough.
Well, you're really kind of pushing the envelope on what's possible, and you're trying to do it on a lower budget, and you're trying to be very much part of the technology of doing it. And I think that fits right in with what you're doing here. You're a technology program. Of course, you want to show off your technology. I mean, I think that's very much part of the genre of content that you're producing. But I have I've been wondering about this question in my head about, you know, you look at Leo's model, right? And you look at, you know, like a Revision 3, and both of those guys have had a very difficult time breaking out of the tech genre, right? And doing other types of content. And it does kind of raise the topic in my mind the question of, is a Leo model duplicatable in other genres? And I have a hard time coming up with another genre that really fits. Maybe sports, maybe. Can you guys think of really any other genre of content besides sports tech that would work in his model?
I think comedy does, but you have to have a set. And you have to have new people. You have to, you know, it can't be the same two guys doing the same shtick every night. You know, there's a few audio comedy shows that are very popular that are doing fine, but they have to bring people. I'm sure it's not the same few folks that are doing the show at night after night after night. They got to have someone else on.
Yeah. But there aren't really that many real examples of a successful network built around other types of genres of content. There's little upstarts, you know, like the Ace Network with Adam Carolla, but there really isn't a lot of examples. You know, Smodcast is one, but that's all pretty much audio. But there just isn't a lot of successful network video podcasters that are successful at the scale that Leo is.
You know, I think politics would be a good one if you could have a political show. I think it would be good, especially with this, time we're coming up. But again, you know, how do you execute that with multiple shows?
The biggest, if it was easy, then the TV shows would have done it right by now. But I always have said, and I'll say it again, if the first station to go on over the top television and have a good business model that actually makes money is going to win. Because, and I think right now the biggest problem is just that whole point of streaming the whole event. And like, for instance, you have TBS. TBS pushes out no matter whether you watch it or not. It's not going to stop. It's not going to start. It's not going to do anything more. You have, if you put TBS online, then one stream becomes 100 streams, becomes 1,000 streams. And then they got to deal with that. So that, I think, of course, that's probably going to be one of the biggest issues, is that bandwidth issue. And if they can make a model that works, then they're going to win.
So I want to pose a question to you guys about a concept. So what if we all move to an IPTV-based distribution platform where everything is streamed live, right? Just like what we kind of have today, but have DVRs that record streaming as like a secondary distribution format. It's really a continuation of what we have today, but using live streaming as the delivery method and then localized DVR-like recording of those live streams as a way to have greater distribution.
That would
God, you actually saw that. You saw that at CES.
Oh, did you?
Did I?
Yes, you did.
All right.
Think about it.
I don't remember which company it was.
It was BitTorrent.
Oh, yeah, that's true. But, you know, yeah, and they're also, yeah, that's true. BitTorrent's doing some stuff in this. They're testing. Now, the challenge, though, Rob, is you got to get the content creators. They have to, they're on a schedule. At 8 o'clock Eastern, they have to be live. Yep. Or if you make the software smart enough to know when they are live that it records it, if you know, because this is, you know, this is new media. It's not broadcast media. If there's some sort of a, you know, some sort of a signal that could be sent, some sort of, hey, we're coming live. The box says, no, oh, the show's coming up. Let's record it. I think there has to be something else because even my show, if, you know, kids are giving me trouble, it's 8:10 in the evening before I start my show versus 8 o'clock. And, you know, we, most of us that are new media don't run on a, well, some do, but many don't run on that tight of a ship.
Yeah. The reason that I mentioned that is that I wonder about the kind of long-term legs of video podcasting, you know, in the current model that exists today versus kind of this over-the-top streaming model that seems to be where everybody's head towards.
Well, you know, I think the, you know, in reality, most of the over-the-top TV stuff is on demand.
Yeah, that's
true. And it's truly, you know, the majority of it, because there's not, you know, who has enough programming? You know, Leo probably does. He can go, he can put stuff in replay. And I can do stuff. I could put, but who wants to, you know, in 4 hours, I have burnt my entire, you know, past week's worth of episodes. And I would, you know, I would essentially be in a 6 hour loop. I mean, every 4 hours it would loop, maybe good, maybe bad for a worldwide audience. But, you know, you have to have fresh content every day, or maybe not every day, a couple of times a week. It's, again, it's a challenge.
Yeah.
But how many times, have you watched, and I have to do a disclaimer here. While I was in Vegas, my wife turned the cable back on.
Major coup.
Wow.
Yeah. Came home and that's why we can watch the Super Bowls tomorrow. I just like, okay. And she was missing a specific set of programming and the 1 year experiment, she'd had enough. And, but believe it or not, it's, I'm doing a little bit of an experiment now to see, okay, what are they really watching? And, it's about an 80-20 split, about 80% of the time on the devices and 20% back on live TV. So I thought, huh, we'll see how long that shift stays.
Yeah, I think I saw some research that came out here recently saying that TiVo users only watch live TV 27% of the time.
I'm not surprised. Who has time to watch the commercials? And that's part of the problem with this, you know, the on-demand stuff on the internet. You know, my advertisers are keeping, you know, I'm having to do much heavier reporting now than I used to. And, you know, they're trying to grasp the, for a better word, they're trying to grasp the, when and where, and what's the effect, the immediate effect. You know, they're so driven by the old model, that you know, their patience wears very thin very quickly. They don't understand the long, you know, they understand it, but they don't want to, you know, they're so used to having 10 ad spots run on national TV and you can see a bump that very same day. They don't understand that this show's produced today, released today, and there's going to be people watching it over the next 96 hours and maybe reacting, you know, later on. You know, they have a hard time grasping that. And that's what I think why the online models are having such difficulty is they're held to a different standard and it doesn't match their production cost.
Yeah. Well, then there is higher distribution costs for online content as opposed to the kind of the closed network distribution that the cable companies use.
Well, the cable companies have a fixed cost. You know, they know what they're paying for a channel and there's no guessing.
Well, it's also more like a LAN network, right? So we don't pay for bandwidth between our computers
right.
in our local network. And that's exactly what Comcast and these big cable companies have is basically all of us are on like their big LAN network, right?
Right.
So they're not having to pay for downline bandwidth getting to our house to deliver content that's hosted on their servers.
We had some pretty remarkable numbers already on our content from CES. Very remarkable terabytes of traffic. And the, you know, that results in real cost too. You know, and we look at that from a, you know, yep. you know, thank God we have GoDaddy as a sponsor there that are taking care of the bandwidth. Because all of a sudden you get too popular, then it's a big issue. Now, you look at what Boxy did. Boxy's officially pulled the plug on their PC client. And so if you want to run Boxy, that's it. I'm sure the software is going to be available to download a few different places, but they're fully concentrated on the Boxy box.
So do you think that the Boxy box is going to survive?
Unless they can get more TVs, I would not bet on Boxy.
Or chances are they'll probably get snapped up by some other company, right?
It's hard to say because, you know, I think Google's making good inroads into the space, but the different vendors, Android TV, which we saw a lot of. So if it wasn't Google TV and it wasn't Android TV, you didn't see any new vendors with any, you know, adopting Roku or anybody else. Jeffrey, what do you think?
Boxy had their little dongle that you can actually string your TV through Boxy to try and get people used to the Boxy box. If it doesn't get into a TV or if it doesn't change its price point from $249 down to a more manageable $100, then yeah, Boxy box is not going to stick around too much longer.
Yeah, the price is just too high.
Yeah.
And you know, the Google TV, you know, of course, Logitech did a loss leader by selling their Google TVs for $99. But, you know, they're not going to, when those inventories are gone, you're not going to find any more Logitech devices.
Yeah.
But Sony's doubled down. They got two new boxes coming out this year. So it'll be, you know, I don't know. We'll have to see. I think Google's the 5,000 pound gorilla in this space. And Apple, of course, I've already said if Apple comes out with a Apple TV, I'm going to probably be the first product I'm going to get in line for at the Apple store. And Rob, you don't think they're going to come out with a big TV, right?
I think it's possible. I just think it's such a market that is commoditized today and people, you know, buy TVs and keep them for 10 years. Unless Apple really wants to use those things as almost like an all-in-one computer, which I guess they certainly could do. And it's going to be a very expensive television, I'm sure. And I guess it would have to be for them to really, really get into it. I mean, I can see them doing it. I mean, it'd be a way for them to revolutionize television, but I also think that it's not going to be an easy hill. I don't think they're going to sell as many of those as they would sell like a, you know, like a iPad or something like that. It's definitely going to be a smaller market for them, and it's going to take them a long time to build a lot of market share.
I think the fanboys are going to reward them. I think they're going to have I think it'll be a huge uptake. I think they'll sell a lot of them. We'll see, you know, but, I'm sure it's going to be a $2,500 television set.
Yeah.
You know,
well, and also, you know, what's really the direction that's going to go? Is it going to be a set-top box model, or is this stuff going to be built into the TV, actually part of the TV? I think that's a very fundamental question that the industry has right now
It's ultimately has to be in the TV. The competition's for the HDMI 1 port. If you're not, you know, what do? You plug your cable box into HDMI 1, your TV turns on. Usually they default to that load up. And everything else goes in spare HDMI ports. If you got an older TV, you got to put a switch box in, so that makes it even harder. So, I just think that if it's not in the TV, it doesn't work in the long run. No one wants to have more devices on their shelf.
Yeah.
So the bigger question is, who is going to create the first TV with Thunderbolt port? I mean, I have a feeling that's what's going to replace the HDMI port in a TV is a Thunderbolt port.
As someone just said in the chat room, if Apple does not come out with a TV, the hype alone is making other TV manufacturers make their units better.
Yeah. That's probably a good point.
Yeah. And we saw huge improvements to, in just a year, a lot of embedded stuff. And, we'll see how long it takes. You know, the Rob maybe every 3 years, and the average home has five TVs. They, you know, they do hand me downs. You know,
well, I guess if you think about it from that perspective, that's not too much different than how often people buy new computers. Right. So that's right in line. If that truly is the number, then I can probably change my opinion on what Apple's going to do.
I've got a Sony 60-inch projection screen. The only reason I'm thinking about changing it at this, it's not projection. It's a production. I've had it now for 6 or 7 years, maybe 8 years, and I'm real tempted to go down and pick up either Samsung or some smart TV and replace it with a flat screen. First of all, it uses less power, and it's basically time for an upgrade. But and my wife is, she complained when we bought the 60-inch. Now she's like, no, you could buy the next one. I want a bigger screen. And I'm like, okay, honey. Yes, of course we'll have to do that. But and of course my son's foaming at the mouth because he knows that old TV will go in the garage and that's what he'll play Xbox on. So, hey, let's switch gears here. Anonymous says that they have been able to tap and spy on FBI in UK police calls. A recording of confidential conference call between FBI and the UK law enforcement was released by Anonymous. Do you think, this is the only time that this is the only thing that they've released. So the question is, how did they get this? Did they hack something, or did they just get, did someone have email hacked and they got the actual conference call number and dialed in and recorded it? This has got to make the FBI, here you've got the person that normally is spying on people being spied upon. I think it's an interesting turn of events.
Yeah. I mean, as long as this stuff passes through electronic networks and systems, it can probably be hacked.
I wouldn't want to, when you go after the big boys like that, they're going to turn out the forces to go after these folks. If they didn't cover their tracks well, they're all going to be in jail before it's all over. It's a fighting fire with fire, but who's got the bigger flamethrower?
Yeah. It's the whole cyber warfare thing.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
They're a new form of terrorism, right?
Well, you know, that's, they've got some new laws in place that they can label them that, and they could toss them in the slammer, send them to Gitmo. Wasn't Gitmo supposed to be closed?
Yeah, a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I guess that didn't work out so well. let's talk about ad agencies. Ad agencies are using Facebook, have used Facebook as a medium to advertise to folks. 89% of ad agencies have used Facebook. So the question is, have any of you guys ever clicked on an ad in Facebook?
No.
I don't.
Yes.
You have.
I've Bud Light has their tour or win something or something like that. And I click on it just to see what's going on. So I have done it. I've also run ads for Geekazine in Facebook and Google and have gotten some traffic boosts because of them. So there is some validity to them, even though it is 1%. It's still 1% of 300 million.
So that's, you know, I haven't clicked on an ad in Facebook, I don't think, ever, at least not purposely.
Well, I don't also click on sponsored links in the search engines either. So,
right.
Yeah. I think I'm consciously totally ignoring those things now after all these years.
Twitter was 39%, YouTube 36%, LinkedIn 21%, Google Plus 18%. So that's where the ads are running. And I didn't even know you could run ads in Google Plus. I guess you can through AdSense. So that that's where that's happening. Panasonic, and of course this is Japan in nature, Panasonic, Hitachi, Mitsubishi, a whole bunch of companies announced huge losses. Panasonic announced a $10.2 billion net loss, and all these companies are getting just hammered. And the, you know, with my wife being Japanese, we kind of watch what's going on in Japan. And of course, there was the yen is, you know, if you're in Japan and you have dollars to spend or yen to spend, it's a great time to come to the United States because the exchange rate is unbelievable for them, horrible for us, but you know, this is a sign of the times. I think the Japanese economy is in a lot more trouble than what people are saying. They're not even paying it. You know, there hasn't been no news about it. But when you see, you know, big mainstream companies in Japan laying off tens of thousands of people, it cannot bode well.
Yeah.
So, you know, is this just an overall continuation of the global economy in the crapper?
I think things are coming back rather slowly, so I'm not sure it's quite as optimistic as I think the press was kind of painting the picture here over the last few days. But I think we're heading in the right direction. I think things are getting better, but it's very slowly.
It's interesting that the economy is all of a sudden getting better when we're starting into heavy campaign season. So,
Yeah, or is it just spin?
Or are they smoking the numbers or something? You know, that's you always, you know, up to this point, I think where I will know when the economy is getting better is when I drive through cities and I see businesses opening up, and you know, I go through cities and it's like, you know, you shuttered windows and malls that are, you know, three quarters full of businesses and. I think that's when I'm going to figure out the economy's better, but I don't know. I think everyone's still pretty leery.
Yeah, I read somewhere that there's a lot of kind of real estate experts that are saying that the real estate market is not really going to come back into a strong mode again of growth, you know, of appreciation until around the year 2020 to 2023.
Jeez.
So it could be a long haul on the real estate side.
You know, I think some people are going to get frustrated. I think people will, you know, if they can't sell, you know, the average American sells their house and, you know, changes quite often. You know, there isn't, you know, I know people here in Hawaii, every 3 to 5 years is the pretty typical turnaround for people buying a home. Because what they do is get a little equity in it and they move, you know, they move up. So, you know, with the 25 or 30 years, they have, you know, upgraded their house in size and space a couple of times over. You know, so obviously if with everyone underwater, that is obviously probably not going to happen. People are going to stay put a lot more, but probably people are going to get, you know, I just wonder how many people are just saying the hell with it, taking the 7-year hit on their credit report and just walking away from properties. Yeah. I just wonder if we're going to see, you know, if the housing market doesn't come back, is that what's going to happen? Are the people just going to say the hell with it and say it's not worth it and rent?
I think that there's a boom in rentals right now. That's for sure. Like that's where all of the real estate movement is right now, I think.
Yeah.
It's on the rent side. Yeah.
Well, the government, anyway, the government and the banks own plenty of houses to rent, don't they?
Yeah. So what did you guys think of the whole IPO filing of Facebook this week?
Wait a minute. They filed for IPO?
Yeah,
no way.
The surprise. We're not going to get any of that stock.
Well, I did hear a rumor that they may pull a Google on this one and make it open a certain percentage of the offering be open for like auction or something like that on the public market.
You know, I think the stock's risky, but I think I'd have to buy some.
Todd, yeah, I kind of felt some hesitation in your voice on that, but in the end, you came sliding into home plate. So,
well, you know, if you were given the opportunity, would you buy some, Rob?
Probably. I think I'm a little bit unsure about their long-term strategy and what they're going to become. Not what they are today, but what are they going to become?
Yeah,
I'm really not sure on that. Are they going to be kind of a cloud-based operating system application platform? And if they are, then it's an interesting play, right?
Yeah.
But if they're just going to be this social network that does what they do today, I'm not as bullish about them.
And it's one of those things where, you know, shoulda. You know, many years ago, I was given a stock tip. This was back in the very early 80s. I had a Japanese girlfriend in Tokyo, and her father was pretty high ranked at Sony. And he gave me a stock tip that is, you know, probably will assure myself that I have a little bit of a nest egg when I retire. If I can keep my wife away from touching it in the meantime. It's one of those things where opportunities like this come around very few times in a lifetime. And, you know, it's just one of those stocks that you wonder if you should roll the dice. The question is, so what's it going to come in as a price? It's been trading at like 32 in the pre-IPO market. At 32, that's not bad. You know, that's doable. You know, you look at Apple. Wouldn't you wish you bought Apple 10 years ago? And, you know, what was it, down to 12 or something like that? And, you know, you could retire off a modest investment from before. But I don't know. I just, if they make some available, I think it's going to get snatched up very, very quickly. And I think the common guy, the are not going to be able to get access to it. I think the 2 or 3 or 4% of institutionalized investors will get all of it, and the rich will become richer.
But if the stock is, or the company is, that next generation company that I think we all think it could be, buying a couple of weeks after the offering may not be a bad time to buy. So
yeah. And it might be a rocky road there, and that might be something you're going to have to hang on to for 20 years, you know?
Yeah.
But
I think things will move a little quicker than 20 years, but yeah.
We'll see. We'll see. You know, you never know. And you just hope it goes up and splits 10 or 15 or 20 or 40 times. You know, that's what you that you want. What's what you want. But of course, you know, it, with the way things are going, you could they could end up being owned by the Chinese. You know, the Chinese could come in and buy the stock up. They're buying other media companies. So I'm just joking.
The biggest thing is you're buying something that doesn't technically exist.
You're what?
You're buying something that technically doesn't exist. I mean, Facebook could disappear tomorrow. And there's nothing else. I mean, there's no products, there's no tangibles there. It's just Facebook.
Well, they have lots of goodwill. They have users that love it. They go on it, they use it, they buy, they play games, and you know, I'm probably not a typical Facebook user, you know. That Zynga, that one company, you know, look at them. They've, you know, their whole model's been building games for Facebook, and they're multi, you know, they've got a $7 or $8 billion valuation.
I mean, I think it depends on what you think Facebook could become. It's not, I don't think the conversation is about what they are today. I think it's what they could become. If you think about the comparison between Facebook and Microsoft, you know, that combination, they're working closer together with Bing, right? And then you look at Google and what they're doing with Google Plus, they're kind of trying to compete. You know, if you look at search and you look at social network, there's this kind of this combination that seems to be where the sweet spot is. But if you look at what's happening in the mobile space around apps and cloud-based platforms, you can start to envision this world where our devices, our phones, our computers, and our slates become just screens to the cloud, right? And does that mean that a Facebook could become an application platform, kind of like what we see with Android or Windows or some combination of that? I think that's a more interesting question as you look into the future.
Yeah, I don't know, to be honest with you. Angelo's texting me right now. We're doing our annual retreat in Chicago next weekend. He says, and we have a shopping list, and I had put in an order to him to pick up a bottle of Jim Beam. He says, how big a bottle do you want? And I'm like, well, just get me a fifth. And he's like, 50 liters? I'm like, no, 50 liters? We're going to have the whole hotel?
I'm coming down then.
Yeah, oh, my God. Regular size. What do you call that now? What's a regular bottle size of booze?
Regular, a fifth.
Yeah, a fifth. Yeah, regular
12,
size.
12 liters?
A fifth. I've always called it a fifth. I'm not sure what else you call it. Yeah, it's just a, you know. Okay, I'm texting him back. He's probably at the liquor store picking up the stuff. Regular size, a fifth. Not sure what else you call it. Okay. When Salman tells me to pick up a fifth, it's one of those square bottles about that big, you know. I'll never drink it all.
Yeah. And you shouldn't drink it all.
Yeah. And especially 2.5 days, you know, they probably drink this much out of it or something.
Yeah.
Oh, funny. I guess, you know, that's basically, I have some other stuff here today, but nothing is really as kind of important as what's been announced this week.
You're not going to talk about that one subject?
About, it starts with an M?
Yes.
About Mevio? I kind of hinted at it at the beginning, you know, and here's what I think about Mevio. They're a business. They have to make money. They had content creators that weren't playing in the advertising side. And they said, why am I hosting this for free? And they gave them opportunities to become producers. And they said, okay, free ride's over. You know, I think that
says it all, Todd.
You know, I don't know how, you know, people think companies can just continue to give shit away. I just, I don't get it. Why do people get so upset when their free service is canceled? It's you don't get anything else for free. You don't get your water for free. You don't get your gas for free. You don't, don't get tires for your car for free. It's, But, you know, I guess people on the internet have an expectation everything should be free. You know, Google and YouTube, of course, has helped with that, giving stuff away and giving content away. Well, YouTube would die in a minute if they told everybody you have to pay $50 a month to host your video here. What would happen? YouTube would implode.
I don't know. I'm not so sure that that would be the case. I think they would lose, kind of like, you know, what happened with Mevio. I think that they're sure there would be some folks that they would lose, but I don't think they would lose the successful aspect of their business if they charged, you know, an incremental amount for different levels of hosting.
That's probably true too.
Maybe that's ultimately where YouTube is going to wind up.
You know, what do you think about it, Jeffrey? About what Mevio is doing?
I'd pay a couple $100 a year, or maybe like a $20 to $30 a month subscription plan if I could get a YouTube Pro account that actually had the ability to do live streaming on this site.
Oh, yeah.
And post my videos and turn Hangouts into live streams and stuff like that. So yeah, I would definitely, because I YouTube is a top search engine. I mean, you have like, was it the top five search engines? Google is number one, and YouTube is something like number three or four. So I would definitely go for a YouTube Pro account.
It may cut down on some of the cat videos.
Getting hit in the jubblies,
I think,
yeah.
There's plenty of them up there already, so.
Yeah, I think so too. So, you know, I don't know. And I don't think that, you know, based upon the Twitter traffic, I think there was probably, you know, I don't know how many shows were axed over there. I'm going to say, you know, under 100.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say.
I'm more about the part that they locked down their channels, from what I understand, is they wouldn't let them in to collect their stuff and go. And that, I have a big problem with that. Even though it was absolutely free, it's still their content to be able to lock down or to get. And if I read that wrong, that's the way I understand it, is the fact that the content, they cannot get into their content to do anything with it.
I think you're correct. I think the RSS feeds went dead and the content was not made available, but I think it's still there. And I don't have any firsthand knowledge on this, but it's my understanding that if the content creator signs a pro producer contract, that they'll turn it back on. But I don't know what that contract entails. I don't know anything about that.
Yeah, and I want to be clear on this topic too, that it's not like Mevio's, you know, get shutting down or going out of business,
right,
or anything. All of their kind of network content that they have is still active, still functioning. If they're under contract, everything's cool. And, you know, I contacted them and verified that because I was concerned about it for Zune. And so things are normal there, except for those content providers, like you said, that were not under contract.
I think I heard Adam Curry last year talk about Mevio is actually finally profitable. So, you know, I don't know if that means 1 cent or $10,000 a month, or, you know, anytime you're in the black is good irregardless. But I did hear that from him. There was no more details than that. And of course, they're not obligated to announce their earnings because they're not a public company. So they can do whatever the hell they want. But, you know, let's be honest. I don't want Mevio to go out of business. I want them to be successful, same as I want Leo to be successful. And I want Libsyn to be successful. And, you know, hopefully that, you know, there's enough of the pie going around that hopefully Raw Voice can continue to be successful. And, you know, we can continue to move the bar forward. And that's one thing that we're going to be doing next week. We're going to be talking about, okay, what's the bar to set this year? You know, Rob, what would you have us do? I mean, what's your recommendations for Raw Voice for 2012 as a company and a network of 10,000 content creators?
I think what you're doing is great. I think you're creating kind of that platform that kind of lives in both worlds of aggregating content providers, help them monetize. You're building platforms to help them distribute it. You're giving them wise advice about how to manage their shows. And, you know, I think what you're doing is great. I think that the recent conversations about, you know, maybe doing more stuff with your brands and trying to polish those up and try and make them mean more to people, I think is a good direction too. I think, you know, there's always good work that can be done on that. And I think, you know, you're one of the leading lights in this area, I think, for independent content creators. And I think what you're doing is great.
Well, I appreciate that. And, you know, it's a challenge. It's, you know, you see it in a certain mailing list at times. It feels like I'm herding cats. And, you know, it's tough when you have folks that it's tough when you have folks that are, you know, they are very independent and don't fully understand the value of teamwork. I guess that's the best way to say it.
Yeah.
You know, Jeffrey understands it. Andy understands it. A lot of our team members at CES completely understand it. There's a benefit for all, but, you know, in the end, we've got to figure out, what's best for the network. And that may mean a paring down of some shows that aren't contributing. And if sometimes smaller is better. So we'll see.
You all know that last year I went through a full evaluation of my website, and it's like, what am I going to keep and what's going to toss? I had a show that was doing 3 to 4 times better than my other shows. And I canceled that show because, one, it was a tough show to produce every single week. Two, it was pretty much stagnant. It plateaued. And Even though I missed doing that show, I am happy I did what I did, because now the new show, iPad 365, is pretty much matched and starting to surpass those numbers, and I'm really happy about that. I think that people as content creators have to look at their sites and really do the hard thought: is this something that I'm going to be a part-timer on or a full-timer on, or am I going to make a steak dinner out of it every 3 months, or am I going to make a steak dinner out of it every week? And if they're into it, if they're not into it, maybe the one thing we should do with techpodcast.com is categorize it a little bit more for those part-timers and those full-timers.
Well, I think Tech Podcast if my recommendations are taken, I think Tech Podcast will become TPN.TV. The site will become TPN.TV, and then the content that's on TPN.TV will become a part of the blog, or we'll figure out how to integrate it so it has a major presence there. But I think a rebranding is in order with the network, and we'll see. We've got to work that out and figure out how that happens logistically. I think that's going to be one of my recommendations that we're going to do.
So Todd, with that rebranding, would you consider opening it up to other types of genres of content besides tech?
I think we're going to keep TPN.TV tech, but rawvoice.tv, which we have a placeholder for, will be more for a bigger genre range. And kind of what you talked about earlier, Rob, which genre ranges work good in video? You know, is it comedy? Is it sports? Is it some tech? Is it some cooking shows? What is the variety that is going to appeal a number of people? You know, we've got limited resources, so we have to really plan carefully on what we want to do. There's a whole bunch of stuff I want to do, but realistically, can I do it all with the staff that we have? Probably not. So I kind of have to weigh what we can really do well.
One comment that I like to make on this particular topic is from what I see in the channel strategy for, I mean, even at YouTube, and I think other places as well, as I think about even the area that I'm working in, is the focus on tech as a genre in the TV side is not necessarily a, I guess, a well embraced.
It's not sexy.
Well, yeah, it's other genres, you know, lifestyle, comedy, you know, more of the entertainment topics are much more kind of front and center. Just a little observation.
But, you know, it's an interesting thing, though. You look at what's paying the bills and
right.
who's advertising in the space, and you don't have lifestyle companies. You don't have companies related around adult entertainment or anything like that that are coming in advertising. So ultimately, it's kind of a, you know, you wish in one hand and, you know, do what you got to do in the other, but you got to pay the bills.
Yeah. And I think that there is a disconnect in understanding of online viewers' interests and the broadcast side, right? So you have this kind of world of perception that the media consumption, and they're trying to cater, I think, to what the perceived genres of content that are successful in the broadcast side. They're trying to translate that to the channel's strategy at like YouTube and things like that, that would align more with the success. So as you think about kind of the mainstream, right, versus the online piece, which is different, but they're trying to shift that genre over into the website. And I think that may be a difficult transition. And I think I would like to see them embrace more tech programming as part of that conversion strategy, but that's not actually what I'm seeing.
You know, I'll share. I got an email from a group, a company. I've used them in the past, and they said, "Why aren't you running advertising on your content on our site?" And I'm like, "You can't find my content on your site. And you guys got us buried in like 25 layers down." I said, "Someone comes to the site, there's no discovery." I said, "There's no chance of me being found on. Why do you know?" I'm using you as a second point of presence, but, you know, on the offhand luck that someone's going to find my show. And the person that emailed me was a little bit taken aback. They were a little bit surprised I was as blunt as I was. But yeah, I think what it is that you have certain groups that, you know, when it comes to the tech side, they bury the content. You know, you stream, they bury the content. Blip, they bury the content.
I'm trying to say, yeah.
That's, you know, and so, you know, let's just go over and look at Blip real quick. So we'll go over to Blip, BLIP.tv. And what are we going to find on the front page? Watch me eat words. We
C-R-A-P.
Have.
C-R-A-P. Wait, what? Oh.
So, okay. So we have some serial stuff, a cooking show, What Women Want, a political show, a football show. Some animated television, whoever. Oh, we got Noise Vox. I guess that's a music show. So, you know, and let's look at the bottom. Okay, so we have, you know, hardly anything that is even at all related to our genre. And so let me look at categories. See all categories. Oh, there's tech and gadgets. So let's load tech and gadgets. All right. What do we have here on the bottom? We've got What the Tech. I don't even know who he is. Tech Snap. We got some ad over here. All right. Let's scroll down. We got, you know, nothing. You just, you know, one show that they've show on here. And how do I find the rest of the content? I don't. So let's go over to Ustream.
Before you do, if you think that's bad, try the Roku app. I mean, you look at the Roku app for Blip.tv. If you try and if you go to the tech area of the Roku app on Roku, then the shows that are there are shows that half, like 3/4 of the shows have ended their episodes. They haven't been creating content in over a year and a half. And I've called them out several times on that, saying, "Hey, refresh your content and you might get more people coming to the site."
So we got some sports. We got whoever Victoria Justice is. She's pretty cute. We got some sports here, a Universal stuff. We got wrestling going on. Woo, that's what I want to watch. We've got the big shows being advertised, UFC stuff.
You mean the big game?
The big game. Yeah, the big game. You've got TechCrunch TV. So that's the one.
Crunch, yeah.
There's the one. So, you know, just wonder, do you wonder if they paid for that position on that website? That's the question. Okay, so let's click on tech. All right, we got the NASA show, which is pretty popular. We still have CES links up here. We got to look at this. Okay, let's see if we're still on here. Oh, they took it down. We got Leo. But why do they have... CES has been over for a month. Why do they have this?
Is that... Yeah, are they still going? Is it live right now, or?
Let's look. No, it's not live.
Okay.
It's no.
No, it would be.
So they don't care. No one cares. Gives a two craps about tech.
Yeah.
Well, we do. We do. And let me see here. Let me actually.
Well, and if you go to YouTube and look at their channels, it's kind of the same way.
There's where you can go get some tech, you know. So,
yeah, own your own properties, Todd. There you go.
Yeah, it's okay. Let's go over to YouTube. Let's see here. YouTube.com. Oh, I just almost sent this to a porn site. Here we go. YouTube. That wouldn't have been cool. All right, YouTube.com. All right. What do we have on here? We've got some Angry Bird stuff. We've got, because you're a friend of mine. That's why you're on the front page. I was like, holy crap, Jeffrey, you're on the front page. Let me log out.
To log out, yeah.
Let me log out and see what it looks like when I'm logged out. Okay, so we got OK Player, whoever that is. And we've got some, you know, some blooper videos, comedy stuff, some sports. Snooki, oh my god, make you puke. So let's go here and let's look here. News, comedy. Okay, let's go science and technology. Where are we at? Anyway, this is a few tech videos. So anyway, you know, we think tech should be up front, right?
No, I don't think so.
No.
In fact,
I think it needs to be up front, and I'm not sure that these companies would ever put it up front.
Okay, one at a time. Jeffrey, go ahead and say that again.
iPad 365, out of the 7 days that I do the show, I split it up into seven different categories. On Mondays, I do business apps. On Tuesdays, I do games. On Wednesdays is utilities. Thursdays is productivity apps. So because of that, I can actually, when I categorize it, my show is not in technology for the iPad app. It's more in business. So I'll actually put it in the category of business. So if you go to the business, you'll see more. I think the technology area is way too oversaturated. And if you're trying to start a tech show, you better be somebody like Leo to get numbers.
Rob, what were you thinking?
Well, I was just thinking, I don't believe that any of these platforms are ever going to put tech up front. From what I see or what I've heard of from the kind of consumption numbers, is that they are kind of reflecting where they're seeing activity, right? So the thing is that they're trying to reflect what the broader audience is looking for, and it's probably not too far off the mark. Though I think as you look at each one of these platforms, I think that they could do a much better job of embracing the better content from those genres. And it may be that Blip and those kind of platforms don't really cater to tech podcasters or to tech content creators, because those guys are much more advanced in their content production, and they're going it more alone, or they're gravitating towards areas that are next generation that doesn't necessarily involve Blip.
YouTube, Blip, Ustream, Xbox, everyone, they can make stars overnight.
Yeah.
They can make their own stars. They, you know, by the flick of a switch, someone could decide, I like this guy's content, and they give him some prominence, and they can make a star overnight.
Well, and, yeah, I speak to my own preferences on Zune, because I actually manage that part of it for Zune, and I always keep tech shows in the mix. So yeah. It's always there, and now granted, I probably have a little bit of bias for that, and I'm much more knowledgeable about that area. But I also have to keep a balance too.
That's true.
I have to keep a balance of comedy, sports, Hollywood stuff, and tech. And I think those are the genres that people are interested in. So I just have to keep a constant balance, and I try and keep it balanced with tech too. So
yeah. Well, guys, we're real long here. We're an hour 35, and we need to, Jeffrey and I have another thing we need to do here at the top of the hour, and I need to bounce and reset. But
all right.
Thanks for hanging out. Of course, Jeffrey, they can find you over at geekazine.com, yeah?
Geekazine.com, yeah.
And Rob, of course, if people have questions on new media stuff or podcasting as far as the Xbox or Zune platform, you can reach you at rob@zune.net. Is that still good?
I would actually, if you want to reach out to me, I would just send me a tweet at Rob Greenlee. It's probably a really good way. I've got a couple of websites out there too, robgreenlee.com and webtalkradio.com too, so I can be found there. But Twitter is a great way to reach out to me if you have a question about getting your podcast into the Zune podcast marketplace. I'd be more than happy to help. You can also send me an email at rob@zune.net. I'd be happy to talk with you there too.
All right. Well, guys, that's good. And of course, you've been watching the Saturday morning tech show here at Geek News Central. We will not have one next Saturday. I'm going to be at a retreat in Chicago. Yeah, that's a great... You know why we have retreats in places where it's cold? We don't... No distractions.
Actually get some work done, right?
Yeah, we get work done the whole weekend. So anyway, guys, thanks. And everyone that's been watching, thanks so much. Actually, the show will not be in replay. We'll be up in replay later today. But once I go offline, the show's going to be offline. But until next time, everyone take care. We'll see ya. And aloha.